Hey everyone, welcome to the Team Flower Podcast. My name is Kelly and we are going to dig right in today. If you're new here, I just want to let you know that we talk about flower discoveries. We have an interview with a special guest. A lot of times that is a floral designer, but we have all kinds of different people from the flower world here. So no matter what you do with flowers, whether you grow, design, create, sell, give flowers, if flowers are a part of your life and you resonate with the mission of loving the world through flowers, this is the right place for you. You have found a family to dream with. So let's dig in. Welcome to Flower Discoveries listeners team. Hello, everyone.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Always fun to be together. Coming back. Linking hearts, linking arms, linking lives. It's good.
That was great. I feel like it reminded me of Remember the Titans for some reason. I love it.
Oh, man. Did you guys ever play that that Red Rover Come Over game? Elementary school. Yep. Okay, so this is a widely played game. You think about how scary that is, you know, to go running in, trying to break through people's body. Yeah, I did not play contact sports. Red Rover was not a favorite game for me, but they linked arms in that game, didn't they? The premise was a little different than what I'm going for today, though. Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm excited. So today we have Jesse and Janine, Megan and Amanda. We're here. Yeah, I am so appreciative. So many of you, I think over 550 people reached out with applications whenever we did just kind of like an open application call earlier
this spring.
It did
get up to 650 was the final number.
Oh, boy. Okay. Needless to say, we, at the same time is when Jason's business was taking off and when Megan needed to do some change, we all have had these like changes with our hours and things like that. And so it has taken us a very long time to go through all of those applications and to sort and filter and think about the list of projects that we have had that we would love to do at some point in time. And putting together that group of people to be able to do that kind of in the short term and then flagging for long term. Anyway, all that to say, I am incredibly grateful and humbled. I was not expecting and we were not set up. We were just not anticipating that kind of a response. And so I just wanted to publicly say thank you so much to every person who took the time to fill that out, and just know that slowly we're going through that. And as I'm going through it, I'm also thinking about other friends and other businesses in the floral industry that might need an extra helping hand. So thank you so much for filling that out. And that's something new that's going on over here in our world. Anything that you would have to add to that, Jesse?
No, that was great. That was great.
Cool. Okay, so I'm going to pass it over to Megan here first to get us kicked off.
Hey, so I wanted to highlight my favorite article on Team Flower. It's from our member Courtney Croman. Croman? Let me know if I'm saying that wrong. But it's called How to Hang Vines and Greenery on Any Surface. And I have personally used this article multiple times for real life events. I've gone through and built out my shopping lists for prep, and then I have implemented these tips and it has turned into great events. And so in this article, Courtney shares different types of walls that you might be needing to hang greenery on, what varieties of greenery work, the best tools to use, tips and tricks, and it's like really in depth, and it's just a super awesome resource to have at Team Flower. So if you have any events coming up where you might have a request from a bride and you're like, you know how you say, yeah, we can do that, and then later you come home, how am I going to do that? You figure it out. Maybe this resource could be helpful for you. So it's called How to Hang Vines and Greenery on Any Surface.
I'm so glad you brought that up and mentioned that again. It's a great article. Jesse, tell us what you're what's on your mind today for the listeners.
Yeah, my discovery, and by the way, if you're not subscribed to our email list, that's how you get the latest free articles and podcasts and videos we send out all the time. So teamflower.org/free. Sign up and you'll get a link like the one Megan shared, but also everything we're sharing weekly that Janine and Amanda helped put together. So what I want to share is something I ran into working with a business recently. We were reaching out to the business. It was a flower business, a florist, and we were emailing their contact, their inquiry form, generic email address. Like a lot of businesses will have contact us at domain or info at domain or hello at domain, you know, whatever your at web address is, you know, so hello at teamflower.org. And we were talking with this business, this person, through that email address, and it stopped working. We hadn't heard from them for a couple of weeks, and I looked back in my email and we were getting undeliverable responses, like auto responses from the email host, and they didn't know this was happening. So then I found another email contact for them and contacted them that way to get a hold of them. But it was a reminder to me, and so a reminder to all of you listening, to do regular audits of your business flow, your business processes, because things happen. Things happen all the time. Server configurations change, and the most important email address for your business, which is receiving new business, new inquiries, new leads, could be not working, and you could just not know about it. You know, you're busy with other things, and you're not getting inquiries, and you're wondering, oh, maybe, you know, it's just something is in the air, and I'm not getting as much business as I used to. And really, it could just be your email is down. So what I'd recommend is just putting a reminder. It doesn't have to be every week. I mean, honestly, quarterly or twice a year or once a year is more than most people would do. Go through email, send an email to whatever that inquiry email address is. Go to your website if you have an inquiry form and fill that out. On your Instagram profile, if you have a contact link there, go through your website just to make sure the most important pages are working. And something else I would say is, and I know this is like, you know, not the most exciting thing to do in a business, but it's what keeps your business alive, right? Go through your devices that you email from and make sure all of those are working, because what can happen sometimes is like on your phone, the configuration changes and you think you're replying to people and you're not. The emails aren't going out. So like go to your iPhone, go to your computer, go to a tablet, receive an email there, send an email from there. You know, do that on each of your devices to make sure that everything is working. Everything is flowing through your business like it should, because you could be not replying to people thinking that you were, and you're losing business that way as well.
Okay, so now that we're all just terrified, can you be more specific? We need to do it. Like, can you tell us the step by step, Jesse? Yes, Amanda.
I was going to add to that and emphasize, even from a practical standpoint, I had the same issue with links recently. So if you link out to like work that's been published that's on your website, sometimes those links are broken, and then that actually harms your SEO, because like you have like these like things in your portfolio and you don't know that they're no longer working unless you do what Jesse's saying and just check them quarterly or, you know, twice a year or something. So definitely a real thing that could be really helpful.
And that's another thing too with your website. Never change the link to a page after it's live. Never. There's ways you can set up redirects if you want so like Squarespace, for a lot of people use URL redirects is a setting in Squarespace. And you can set up a redirect. Say you have a blog article that you want to be redirected from your website /bouquets. And you want it redirected to this blog article. Don't change the blog article link to bouquets, because then, like Amanda was saying, if you have publications or someone that had picked up that blog article linking to it, now that's broken and no one can find it from that publication. So that's something else to keep in mind too. Set up redirects, don't change your page web addresses. But to answer Kelly's question, as far as what to do, just think, okay, I'm a potential customer. How do I interact with my business and go through that flow. You know, go to your website, fill out an inquiry form. If you have multiple pages, each with their own form set up, fill out the inquiry form on each page where that exists. Then when you receive that inquiry from yourself, reply to it from each of your devices or however you would reply to it. If you found your business through Instagram, click the contact link to make sure that works, or whatever web address you're using there, that still works. So again, annually is fine. Twice a year, quarterly would be great, because you could be missing out a quarter of business if something was down and you didn't check it. So I'm not trying to freak you out. It is rare for something like that to happen, but in technology, there's just a million layers between you and someone else that can just unpredictably change that you didn't change. It's just something in that layer stack changed. So do a regular audit.
Okay, so that's the big takeaway. Set your calendar to do that once a quarter. We'll do it. And if you see anything that we need to fix that's been unlinked, tell us.
Please.
If we see anything that's been unlinked on
yours,
we'll tell you.
Like I say, if you see something, say something.
That is one of our mottos here among the team. If you see something, say something. I love it. All right, let's get over and talk to our special guest. Today, our special guest is Natalie Boone. She is the owner of the Wild Folk Florist in Norfolk, over in the United Kingdom. Her particular job in her business is ever evolving. She predominantly is a wedding florist using her own flowers, but recently began to incorporate workshops and pick your own flowers. She's always thinking of ways to share what she's built on her crazy hill over the past year and is looking to move further into holistic avenues like floral retreats and things like that. So welcome, Natalie. It's so great to have you today.
Hiya. Good to be here. Thank you for finding me.
Oh, it's been wonderful to just become acquainted with you and your work and all those things. We're excited to introduce you to the Team Flower audience today. And to talk a little bit more about mindful nature, outdoor therapy, working with flowers, all those kinds of things. Tell us a little bit more about your heart for those aspects in your flower business.
Yeah, so I have come to this job through a very, very windy road. So I actually started off my career as a primary school teacher and went into school leadership. So by 26, I was a deputy head teacher of a school and just kind of threw myself into working long hours and having targets. And then I had my son, and I just found trying to kind of mesh motherhood and working in that kind of environment, which is incredibly inflexible, really difficult. And around that time, we always also moved somewhere with a garden. And I found that on weekends, I was spending a lot of time in my garden as my sort of stress therapy release. And we built a wildlife pond, and I would sit during the week at the kitchen table working, and I could look out into the garden and see dragonflies and frogs hopping around, and just to see the space sort of come to life. It really was a big sense of achievement, and I just loved it so much. And we got married, and I grew the flowers for our wedding, just kind of by accident, really, because we were trying to save money. Our son was little, and buying our first house had really kind of taken it out of us financially. So it was a cost-saving exercise. And then I was like, oh, this is amazing. I really enjoy this. And I did a short, like, day-long course in just how to make a hand-tie bouquet and a buttonhole and stuff. And then my sister was like, can you do the flowers for my wedding? And then someone else asked if I'd do the flowers for their wedding. And it just kind of went from there. So I've tried to turn my stress relieving activity into my career, which is not without its difficulties.
I was going to say, how has that switched for you? And does it still, do you have a new stress relief activity, or have you, incorporated some things that help it still feel pretty?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's so interesting that you say that, because I hit a really difficult point this year. So this is my, it was actually my first winter, this winter just gone, at the new house. And I was just spending the whole time trying to lay the foundations for my flower field, which is up a really steep hill and has a lot of logistical challenges. And I was spending day in, day out, shoveling horse manure, in the cold, in the snow. And I was just like, what am I doing? This is not really pleasurable anymore. This project was a stupid idea. And I was like, well, what else can I do to kind of relieve the stress? And actually, I tried picking up different things. Like, I tried doing some drawing, or, you know, going back to knitting. And actually, nothing really did it for me in the same way that playing with flowers did. So I just got more into playing with all my dragons. I say playing, but that's kind of how I describe it, is when I got all my dried flowers out and I just like make a wreath or a bouquet or something, there is just something that happens to my brain. It just sort of switches off and I go into like a trance almost, and then just enjoy playing with every single stem and looking at the color and the texture and thinking, what will go with that and what will go with that? And I think over the course of the winter, I'd just lose myself in my dry flower stock. And sometimes all I would do was take pictures of different colors next to each other. But that was almost enough. That was stress relieving enough to kind of still do it for me. So at the moment, obviously starting your own business up, it is always going to be stressful. But the time that I managed to carve out for myself to play with flowers, like it's for no one else, I always enjoy that.
That's a really, really, really important thing to do. I'm so glad that you mentioned that today.
Yeah, I try once a week. I mean, at the bare minimum, half an hour. That's if I've had a really busy week and I can't manage anymore. I still manage to get half an hour in somewhere. And it's really interesting because, you know, that usually the project that I make in my half an hour spare time, or an hour if I'm lucky, that's the project that I'd like posting on Instagram and seeing what people think, because no one else is asking me to make that thing. And I have selected the flowers myself and the colors and made something that I really love. So I quite like putting it out there and seeing what other people think of it, because that's my piece of self-expression. So if you're doing an order for somebody, usually they say, I want pinks and I don't want this and I don't want this. So you are sort of limited by, you know, what the customer wants, whereas the time that I carve out for myself is purely indulgent.
And I think too, just that time that you have with yourself and, you know, snapping those pictures of different colors and playing with the dried flowers, noticing all those textures and all those pieces, I just think about how different that is than whenever you're actually producing arrangements for a job and you have 20 centerpieces that need to go out the door in a very limited amount of time. And it really is two very different parts of your brain that are working in.
I would agree. And actually that's the thing, that part of the brain which switches off and tunes in to, it almost feels like another realm. It's like your mind completely shifts and everything goes out, and just color and joy sort of come in. And that's what I want to give to other people. Because I certainly found, like, during the height of lockdown, when I was looking after both kids and still trying to make my business work, I would find that time when my brain just thought about nothing else, it was most important. And actually, I try and get in two sessions a week. Because, you know, I have tried to sort of practice meditation and things, but I find it really, really difficult with the business being so new not to let those thoughts come in. And actually, if I'm physically doing something, that's when I get my sense of calm. And that's what I would like to help other people achieve through coming here and doing workshops.
So good. What are some things that you're growing there in your garden? Your top five.
Top five. Yes. Top five flowers. Wow. It's really hard to pick five because flowers are amazing. Obviously we're all listening to this podcast because we love flowers, but I like to go for the flowers that have a slightly subtle color. So hellebores are my all time top favorite flower. I love them because they're flowering when not much else is out. In the UK, they come out from sort of February through to March, and they have such subtle colors, which are just so beautiful. And I have actually dried quite a few hellebores this year, but the stems went all kind of like wonky and I wasn't really sure what to do with them. So I sewed them on a piece of fabric that I'd dyed with avocado skins and just hung it up over the window so I can look at them sort of all year. Because I thought, you know, these are such pretty treasured objects. Like I spent so long in winter just like stroking different dried flowers, and then I was like, actually I want to be able to see these. So hellebores are something that I love using, and I think they are actually quite a versatile flower. And then recently I'm quite attracted to the dark things at the moment, so I've got black ball cornflowers out on the field at the moment, and I just love their color. And they go really nice with the chocolate cosmos, which is out. So I like kind of putting them into arrangements. Whenever you put them into a bouquet, it just immediately makes it sexy. And it's just like, yeah, love that dark element. What else? Yeah, my mind has gone to... Oh, I am growing at the moment Canterbury bells, Campanula, and they're in my polytunnel, and they are honestly as tall as I am, and they just have the most amazing shape. They're like trumpets or like big fairy hats for like quite large fairies, and I'm just so surprised by how tall they are. So actually I'm just stripping off the lowest stems and using individual flowers and arrangements. They look amazing. Mm-hmm. And then like I'm growing all kinds of different roses at the moment in the polytunnel. They love the climate in there. I think I've probably got to five, and if you don't stop me, I'll just keep going.
No, that's all so good. I was actually this morning just having some of that like chill time. I woke up super early and was out here arranging some flowers, and the campanula that you're talking about. I had some of those out here today, and the black bachelor buttons. Yeah. They're both so fun and great, very versatile flowers. And I love that campanula, just the shape that it has, being nice and curvy, but still firm. So if you are wanting to do something that does have a lot of like nice movement in it, you're wanting it to drape over the edge of your vessel, you're making a cascade or whatever, they just have such a cool shape to them. And
they make any arrangement look interesting and and sort of fairy-like, like almost like secret garden sort of vibe. I think this is my first year growing them myself, and I saw them in someone else's garden and I was like, what is that? I have to grow that. And they're like, oh, that's just Canterbury bells. And I was just like, okay, I'm getting some. So yeah, we've got a lot this year.
When I was in the UK last, I had seen in someone's garden artichoke. I had really not seen that being grown here in the States at, you know, cut flower farms. I came back with that idea in my mind, and I did find some of the plants here and had them in the garden last year. They're a little tricky to hydrate, but aren't they so cool, especially for like large scale things?
Yeah. So I've got a really amazing wedding coming up next week, and their brief is architectural. They actually came to the flower field this time last year and had a look at what was in bloom. I don't know whether you get flower farms like this in the US, but certainly in Norfolk, everyone's flower farms are quite small scale. So an acre or an acre and a half, and there's little patches of this and little patches of that. There's bits of vegetable kind of like thrown in and stuff. And they just like walked around and picked all the really quirky things. So they picked out the artichokes, they picked out borage. I don't know if it's called borage in America. It's like a blue star, yeah. Like a tiny, delicate blue star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we call it.
Yeah, uh-huh. And it's got like a furry leaf. And I was growing quite a lot of veg at the time. So they've picked out like things that they liked from the veg patch. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of unusual architectural shapes and fennel and things that they've kind of, yeah, they've really embraced the wild organic garden. So they want it to look like a kind of architectural wild garden has taken over their church, which I think sounds fun.
Very fun. I love that you have them out to check and to see what they're drawn to and what's blooming in the garden. And what a nice experience that is to get started on their flower journey for their wedding. I love that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it just happened by accident because I think their wedding was postponed due to COVID and they were really down. And they just said, we're really gutted that our wedding's been postponed. But we're going to be in the area. And I said, come and see the flowers. And now I offer it to everybody. And sadly, not every couple takes me up on the offer. But I definitely think in terms of like encouraging couples to think more about sustainability and what's in season, it was really helpful for them to see what was flowering.
Cool. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about how you are, you know, intertwined or how you interact with your community, how you take flowers there. What's those connections look like for, what do those connections look like for you?
So to begin with, in year one of my business, I was living in the city and growing in my tiny back garden and then on a plot of land that I was renting. And I was doing some bouquets for delivery. I was doing markets. I was trying workshops. I was just like trying a little bit of everything and just trying to get my name out there. And then when I decided that, yep, we were definitely moving to the countryside, I was definitely going to set up my flower field. I was like, do you know what? I am just going to focus on weddings. And I had 30 plus weddings booked in. So year two was the year that kind of COVID hit, and that was the year that I was going to have these 30 weddings. And then over the course of the following year, they've moved, they've cancelled, they've postponed, and I was kind of thinking, okay, what can I do to still have a business, like still have a viable business, because I'd been very bold in saying I'm just going to be a wedding specialist now, and it kind of felt like, haha, serves you right. Shouldn't have said that. So I started doing bouquets for delivery again, and initially that was like incredible because everybody wanted to send their loved ones flowers. And I live just outside of the city, 10 minutes away from Norwich, and I had already sort of established a bit of a name for myself, and people, yeah, the flowers were in high demand, which was really nice. But then when things kind of opened up again, people stopped sending flowers to their loved ones, and I was like, oh, well, what am I going to do now? Because I was obviously still gardening and getting the flower field going, but I didn't want to feel like I wasn't moving forward. So I got involved in quite a lot of bridal shoots, and that was a really lovely way to meet other suppliers in the wedding industry and also try out creative projects and have wonderful photographs. And then the micro weddings started coming back. So that was when you could have a wedding of six or a wedding of 15. And then I had like three micro weddings a week suddenly in September. And then after that, it was just sort of like, and now what? And now what? So I kind of feel like I am constantly, and now what? Because the situation keeps changing here. It keeps being like, now we're in lockdown, now we're not in lockdown. Now we can be outside, now we can do this. Weddings are, at the moment, they're 30 people. They're going up to bigger numbers next week. So it feels like it's a bit of an evolving landscape. And the wedding landscape itself is something that has been quite upsetting to work in, you know, having to talk to couples about their postponements and having to take on a lot of brides last minute who weren't necessarily their first choice of florist. That's quite difficult because obviously my approach is about sustainability, and quite often they're coming to me without that kind of sustainable approach, and there can therefore be a little bit of a communication issue. So I've tried to think recently about more holistic directions, because I have got so much out of working with flowers over COVID, and I wanted to share that with other people. So when I was at the height of kind of feeling locked down myself, I was thinking, oh my gosh, but at least my children are like, my youngest is 3. I thought, at least I don't have a baby right now. That would be so hard. And then I just thought, okay, well, what could I do to help those new mums? Because without a community and somewhere to go, it's so isolating and difficult having a new baby, especially if you're a first time mum. So I thought, as soon as I have the opportunity, I'm going to invite new mums and babies to come to the flower field. So we started in April, as soon as the government allowed it. And I have 6 women and 6 babies come once a month. And now I have 3 different groups that come once a month. So it's practically every Wednesday morning they come, and they arrive at 10, and we do something a bit different every week. So one week it was raining, we made flower crowns because that was an easy thing to kind of sit down and do together. And then the last 2 sessions, I've taken them on a tour around the flower field and shown them how to cut flowers, shown them which ones to cut, what stage to cut them at, how to condition the flowers. And then this week we did that, and then we also arranged the flowers. And the whole time the babies are in slings, or when the babies kind of got to know me a little bit, I said, right, I'll look after the babies and you guys go off and cut flowers, which was really nice. And the babies all were just sort of like in a circle on their backs, looking up at the trees and like touching each other's faces and playing with the toys. And the mums are all laughing and chatting. And it was just like, it was a real pinch me moment. It was like, I made this. I built this flower field when I was so miserable and I was really questioning my life choices. And now 6 months later, there are bunches of women coming here and laughing and enjoying it, and their babies are having such a good time. And it was like the best feeling I think I'd ever had. And actually I was like, I think I'll take this over weddings, actually. So yeah, I'm just kind of, I am still working on weddings, but I'm just sort of thinking more and more about getting people to come here, because it's quite an unusual setting. Norfolk's really flat. And other than this weird little valley that we're in, it's really, really, really flat. So the hill rises up above the valley, and then the garden has been terraced. So there's sort of 12 different levels, and there's flowers on each level. So it's quite an unusual space with views. It's in the middle of the countryside. You can't hear any cars. And I think people just like coming here, and I like having them here. So I'm thinking more and more kind of moving forward, how I can build on that.
Oh, Natalie, that is so beautiful. And you, you had me at that like lump in throat kind of moment, because I just remember being that I, you know, my daughter is, my daughter's 2, almost 2.5 now, but that was a really challenging time, and just you being able to create community around that in that kind of beautiful setting, like the story that they have, you know, looking back, being able to remember that period of time in life, and just that there were flowers and that there were people beside them. I just, I am so, so touched by that. And, oh, thank you for doing that.
That's okay.
Thank you for sharing that.
You know what is really sweet? You know, my daughter was quite sort of high intensity, and I can remember pushing her to her gymboree class, and it was along a long road, and she'd be lying down in the pram, and every time she saw a tree above her, she went, ooh, and then we'd carry on walking, there'd be no tree, and she'd be like, ah, and I'd be like, oh gosh, so I'd have to run to get to the next tree, and then I'd slow down, and then I'd like have to run to the next tree, and I had to get to gymboree like that. When you have the babies in the outdoors, they are just looking at the trees. And whenever I do a demonstration, I'm holding up the flowers and I'm talking, they're all staring at me like, wow. And they are just quiet. They are just so enthralled. And it's just amazing. They love being outdoors. And I don't really get baby groups outdoors. For some reason, they're always in some like slightly damp, crappy hall. And the group is usually for the baby. You know, the babies don't really care what's going on. All they care about is their mum being happy and, like, you know, there being something to look at. So actually it's super nice for the mums because they get to learn a new skill, take home some gorgeous flowers, and their baby's happy. Aww. So I just think, like, win-win. I'm just mm-hmm. going to carry on doing baby groups, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. That's so good. Okay, last question. Anything that you would like to leave with the floral community? A word, a phrase, something that's on your heart that you just want to share and pass along to everybody today?
I just think, in our ever-changing landscape with the pandemic and climate change, we are facing so many problems that we've never had to face before. And I don't want to sound cheesy, but I do want to say that we need to seriously improve our relationship with the natural world. We have come so distant from what it means, what's in season, what's beneficial to wildlife. You know, there is so much in our current society that we are doing wrong, and it can't carry on like this. And I feel that when you are outside and you are working with flowers and you are working as part of a community, your sense of how fragile but also how wonderful our relationship is with nature, and how we can build something if we try. I mean, my hill, it was 45 degrees steep at points, and when I first started, I had to put watering cans in the wheelbarrow and push them up the hill. I mean, it was horrific. And I'm not going to lie, there were points where I really, really wanted to give up, and I wanted to do something different. But now that I can see how much the community is benefiting from coming here, you know, the baby workshops are just one of the things that I'm doing to get people to come here. And I just think, like, encouraging people to see their gardens differently, to, you know, to embrace weeds in places, to leave things out for pollinators, it's so important. There was a big campaign here in May called No Mow May, and a charity called Plant Life were encouraging people not to mow their lawns and to let the wildflowers in their lawn bloom, which I just thought was wonderful. And just the little fact about that was a 3-acre meadow can be home to 9 million flowers, which would support 500,000 bees every day. So I think there is a tendency for people to overly manicure their gardens, to want clean, straight lines. And actually, we need to start letting nature in a bit more and seeing the beauty in the wiggly stem and the weed, and kind of realizing that we need those things moving forward. Yeah, I guess all, that's my sermon done.
all beautifully said. All beautifully said. I did not realize the power of an unmowed lawn. I feel like maybe you just set some people free and maybe upset a few neighbors along the way that'll need some education. They'll need to listen to this podcast to understand why we're not mowing the lawn. But wow, I just had no idea. 500,000 bees, amazing.
Yeah, well, there it's a hidden paradise.
Mm.
And you know, in the UK, lots of people put astroturf down in their front garden. Like, what a shame. You know, that could be home to, okay, so if 3 acres is home to 500,000 bees, you could be home to like several thousand just in a small, tiny patch. You know, it's like, I think we need to start joining up the dots and helping our relationship with nature. And, like, you know, starting with babies is a nice place to start.
Yeah, so good, so good. It has been amazing to talk with you today. What a blessing you are to the floral community and your community in Norfolk. Thank you so much for being here today, Natalie.
Oh, thank you, Kelly.
Hi, I'm Betsy Maloney. You can find me on Instagram at Roots and Vines. I'm a home gardener. Top tips for starting a cut flower garden. Wondering if you should start a cut flower garden? A recent surge in backyard gardening means many home gardeners are taking a fresh approach to the types of gardenscapes they cultivate in their own backyards. Of course, there are many different kinds of backyard gardens to grow, and each has its own function. For example, a cut flower garden, in which plants are grown specifically to produce flowers for harvesting, is different from a garden meant for landscape purposes, pollinators, or edible consumption. Have specific projects that require access to fresh or dried flowers? Love fresh flower bouquets around the home? Are you a professional floral designer looking to supplement your ordered blooms? Want to build seasonal wreaths to share with friends and family? Then growing a cut flower garden might be the perfect place to begin. Just like any garden, cut gardens require well-amended soil, access to consistent sunlight, and frequent watering. During the summer months, plants will benefit from added fertilizer or compost. Luckily, the same gardening tools used in other garden beds will work well in a cut garden too. But what else should a new gardener consider when starting a cut garden to ensure bountiful blossoms, stems, and leaves all summer long? Plant with the end in mind. Knowing what colors, textures, and scents to capture in a bouquet helps narrow which flowers to grow in the garden, and it saves time and money. Growing a smaller, more focused range of flowers in a first-time cut garden means experimenting with blossoms and adjusting selections each subsequent growing season. A great way to start planning a cut garden is to visit local flower nurseries. Many flower marts carry a wide array of zone-temperate flowers ideal for harvesting or cutting. Consider also perusing seed catalogs to find visually appealing flowers that might not be readily available locally. Some garden design centers even offer pre-planned design templates for gardeners to use when starting a new garden. Select flowers to bloom throughout the growing season. A cut garden is a perfect way to ensure there are always fresh flowers on hand for design projects like bouquets. That's why choosing flowers to bloom at various points during the season is vital for maintaining a steady supply of cut flowers. Keep this part of the new garden simple. Grow flowers that thrive early in the summer, when evenings are still cool, as well as those that do best in midsummer, when days are hot and nights are short. And of course, don't overlook fall blooms either. Using a mixture of both annual and perennial flowers is another common way to provide consistent blossoms throughout the growing season. Start growing your garden inside. Sowing seeds indoors extends the growing season's length and promotes flower diversity in both gardens and design projects. Starting indoors is especially important for first-time cut gardeners in cooler climates, where planting cold-sensitive flowers too early in the season will prevent blossoms from reaching maturity. With just a few extra supplies, think seed trays and seed-starting soil, and a bright sunny windowsill, starting flowers indoors is a simple way to begin a new garden. The best part of starting a cut garden indoors? Spending the winter months reading seed catalogs to find the perfect plants for the garden. Harvest flowers frequently. Get the most out of a cut garden by frequently harvesting the flowers. In fact, some flowers, especially annuals, produce more blooms when cut often. The more flowers cut, then the more grow. So don't hold back when cutting fresh flowers. For some varieties, it actually helps add blossoms. While common kitchen scissors will work, it's best to use a gardening tool specifically designed for cutting flowers, such as snippers or pruners. Make sure to thoroughly clean the gardening tool between each flower harvest to prevent spreading diseases between plants. Common cut flowers. While the selection of flowers to include in a cut garden is personal and depends on the growing zone, there are some easy-to-grow favorites that look great in bouquets or wreaths. Select flowers for their ease of care, visual interest, mood or tone, and floral scent. Among the easiest flowers to grow for beginners are cosmos, daisies, and sunflowers. Each of these plants can be added to a garden with minimal long-term maintenance. Add visual interest with blossoms with a distinct shape and vibrant color, such as a globe or a sphere. Gomphrena, echinops, snapdragons, poppies, zinnias, and delphinium are all prized for their showiness and each works well in hand-designed bouquets. Want to grow flowers to create a certain mood? Try Queen Anne's lace, straw flower, or amaranth. Are you looking for a way to add pleasing floral scents to a project? Peonies, eucalyptus, or Asiatic lilies grow easily and produce delightful aromatic scents. And don't overlook exceptionally hardy native plants, such as yarrow or rudbeckia, which can easily withstand extreme changes in weather or precipitation. After successfully growing a cut garden for a few seasons, consider slowly adding flowers that require more care, such as dahlias or roses. With a little planning, growing a cut garden can be an easy and enjoyable way to develop a steady source of fresh cut flowers to use in bouquets, wreaths, or any flower-based creative project.
Thanks for listening. You can find us over at teamflower.org for more resources like this one. And while you're there, check out the Team Flower Conference. That's where we all gather to learn and grow together. It is magic. You are magic. The work that you do with flowers matters. And we are so grateful for you. Keep going. You're doing a good job.